VOA, the science edition of Press Conference USA. Here's your host, Rick Pantaleo.
Hi, this is Rick Pantaleo. Welcome to the science edition of Press Conference USA. This past July, we celebrated the 50th anniversary of the historic Apollo 11 moon landing and examined the path taken by NASA to accomplish that tremendous feat. On this edition of our program, we'll be looking to the future of human exploration of the moon and beyond. It's been nearly 50 years since a human being last set foot on the moon with the December 1972 Apollo 17 mission. In December 2017, President Donald Trump signed at the White House Space Policy Directive 1. This order outlined a change in U.S. space policy that provides for a U.S.-led program that will again send humans to the moon and followed by future missions to Mars and beyond.
The directive I'm signing today will refocus America's space program on human exploration and discovery. It marks an important step in returning American astronauts to the moon for the first time since 1972 for long-term exploration and use. This time, we will not only plant our flag and leave our footprint, we will establish a foundation for an eventual mission to Mars and perhaps someday to many worlds beyond.
This past March, Vice President Mike Pence, who chairs the National Space Council, announced an acceleration in NASA's efforts when he directed the space agency to return humans to the surface of the moon by 2024 instead of 2028, as the space agency was planning.
I'm here on the president's behalf to tell the men and women of the Marshall Space Flight Center and the American people that at the direction of the President of the United States, it is the stated policy of this administration and the United States of America to return American astronauts to the moon within the next 5 years.
In May, NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine announced that the new name for the program of missions back to the moon would be called Artemis. The name was taken from Greek mythology. Artemis just happens to be the twin sister of Apollo, whose name was adopted by NASA for its first series of moon missions in the late 1960s and early 1970s. Today, we'll learn about NASA's Artemis program and its goal of sending humans back to the moon, to Mars, and beyond. My guest today is Marshall Smith, the Director of Human Lunar Exploration Programs at the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, or NASA. He directs the formulation and execution of NASA's human lunar exploration activities. Mr. Smith joins me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington, D.C. Marshall Smith, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
Marshall, to kick off our conversation today, could you give us a brief overview of NASA's Artemis program?
Yeah, I'm happy to. You know, Artemis is NASA's path back to the moon. And what we want to do is look at our lunar activities, including robotic and human exploration. All of this falls under the Artemis program to get us back to the moon by 2024. And then taking the next step, it's part of the agency's broader plan to go from the moon to Mars and to other deep space locations in our exploration approach. So we're beginning phase one. Phase one goes through 2024, and our goal is to land the first woman and the next man on the surface of the moon. We are going to be conducting integrated test flights of the Space Launch System, the SLS rocket, and the Orion spacecraft, that's the capsule that's on top, and both uncrewed tests known as Artemis 1, and then a crewed test known as Artemis 2, and that's going to be prior to actually sending astronauts to the Gateway, which is a spacecraft that will be orbiting the moon, where we will rendezvous with the Gateway and land on the surface of the moon with our human landing system. And that's all going to be by 2024, so we're really running hard and fast to make that happen.
And I understand that Artemis, actually, in mythology, is the sister of Apollo.
That's correct.
So it's kind of an interesting link between the past with the present and the future.
Absolutely. You know, that was chosen on purpose, obviously, because we want to send the first woman and the next man to the surface of the moon. And Artemis being the twin sister of Apollo, also she's the goddess of the moon as well. So it all fit really nicely, and it makes a good moniker for the program.
Speaking of Apollo, we just celebrated the 50th anniversary of the Apollo moon landing. Why are we going back to the moon after almost half a more than half a century now?
Well, I get that question a lot. You know, why go to the moon? And the reason we want to go back to the moon is because we want to go to Mars and beyond. That's the way I look at it. The moon offers a perfect place for a test bed for us to test systems and capabilities, learning to work further away from the planet than we have in a long, long time. We only took really 6 missions to the surface of the moon, and they were short duration. We came right back. We didn't leave any infrastructure in place. There's nothing we could use to leverage off to go to deep space. And going back to the moon, one, allows us to test our systems to take us to deep space. But the other part is we've learned a lot more about the moon in the intervening time through robotic missions and things like that. And it's actually, for example, there's water ice there. We know there's water ice there. And we can actually use the water to create oxygen for humans, for fuel, and to actually live off of. So going back to the moon to understand the geology and the scientific value of it, and how did the early part of the solar system form, and how did this relate to Earth, and there's a lot of scientific value that we really should get out and learn more about our universe as well.
You're talking about robotic and robotic landers, and of course, that was very important with the Apollo mission as well,
right?
Getting an idea of what will be facing the astronauts. And from what I understand, that there was some concern initially that the moon may have been like sand.
Right.
In other words, when the lunar module came down, it would sink into the sand. So right now, I understand NASA has the lunar orbiter circling the planet. Any other robotic missions going on?
Well, certainly there are other missions going on, but what we're going to be doing, and we've got contracts out in place right now for the Commercial Lunar Payload Services contract, or CLPS, we call it. And we will be launching multiple flights a year to deliver scientific instruments and also do surveys and things like that of the areas that we want to go to, as well as explore the surface of the moon between now and 2024. We're looking for a commercial industry to provide the launches and actually give us payloads for our instruments to go do these types of things, to go investigate where water might be, and to really help us hone in on the right place to land so that we can go explore when we send humans. It's an expensive mission, and we want to make sure we get the most out of it, where we send humans to go work and explore the surface of the moon.
Going back a little earlier this year, back in February of 2019, NASA administrator said that not only are we going back to the moon, but this time, when we go back to the moon, we're going to stay. What do you think he meant by that?
Yeah, Administrator Bridenstine, when he's talking about that, is really talking about, you know, how we are going to send people into deep space to stay. You know, we went on Apollo. We had a mission, and the mission was to be the first. And, you know, Apollo was a fantastic success. It actually transformed a lot of our culture and a lot of our engineering and technical capability as well. But what we want to do is now take the next step. Let's don't go to space just to come right back. We've been in low Earth orbit for, you know, the last 18, 20 years. Mm-hmm. And what we want to do now is continuously go into deep space. We want to, you know, figure out how to get the global economy to go to work on the moon and in asteroid belts and on Mars and go into locations that are further out even than that, you know, taking those next steps. And that's really where we're coming from, is going to stay means establishing a scientific outpost similar to Antarctica, for example. We may do something similar to that on the surface of the moon and eventually at Mars.
What kind of timeline are we looking at for something permanent on the moon like that?
That'll be a little ways off. Obviously, we're trying to get back to the moon, surface of the moon, by 2024. We would like to, by the end of the decade, be talking about more sustained presence, longer duration stays, those types of things. But it really, once we say sustained, we really mean going and continuing to go to the moon, not we're going to go and we're going to stop. We want to keep going, and then we want to go to Mars and beyond. So we're talking about, you know, maybe in the 2030s, going to Mars and proceeding from there.
How long will the initial missions be, like the flight plan for 2024? How long will they be on the moon?
Yeah, so the 2024 mission is a mission where we'll send 2 astronauts on Artemis III, a man and a woman, as we've talked about. They will take off from Kennedy, and they will then proceed to what we call the Gateway, the spacecraft. They'll dock with a spacecraft, and then for a day or two, they'll check out the lander system, which had been delivered to the Gateway prior to that. And then they will then leave that Gateway. They'll go down to the surface of the moon. They will stay several days initially. We won't do a very long trip for the first one. We'll stay several days, do some extravehicular activity, go out on the surface of the moon and collect samples, particularly looking for water, ice, and other things that are of interest to us. And then they'll come back to the Gateway, where the asset module will bring the crew back to the Gateway. We will then get back in the Orion and come home. And that whole mission is probably in the order of, you know, 3 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks, mm-hmm. something like that. Could be a little bit shorter, depending upon how long the missions are on the surface. We just don't know that yet, depending upon the capabilities we have.
I know when the Apollo missions were going on, a lot of care was considered about the safety for the astronauts, and there was still a lot of unknowns at the time. How prepared are we to actually send someone to the moon and stay for more than just a day?
Absolutely. Safety is a very high priority to us, and we are going to make sure that when we build these systems, we test them, we understand them in great detail so that we can then, you know that our crew is as safe as we can make them for a journey like this. You know, whenever you're traveling off the planet to a deep space location, that's inherently risky.
Exactly.
And so it is what it is, and there's only so far you can go as far as you can. But, you know, a lot of things depend on luck, too. And I hate to say it, but, you know, back in Apollo days, you know, somebody could have not turned a screw right or some those types of things, too. So there's definitely risk out there. Mm-hmm. But we do everything that we can. We've developed one of the things I will say is that over the last 50 years, we've learned a lot about spacecraft, and we've got companies now. It's not where we were 50 years ago, where nobody was really
in
space.
Yeah.
It was totally unknown. We had no companies in space. We've been working in space for, you know, the last 50 years. We've got independent companies that have been going in space. We've been launching satellites. We know how to build things that can work for a long time very reliably. So we're going to leverage all of that industry know-how and capability to build a system that will work as we think it will as we go to the moon to be as safe as we possibly can.
Going back to what the NASA administrator was saying in his blog earlier this year, he mentioned that we're going to the moon with innovative new technologies and systems to explore more locations across the surface than we ever thought possible. Can you elaborate on what he was talking about?
Yeah, I think, again, you know, when we go back to the moon, we're going to be using the capabilities of computers, for example, avionics systems that we have today. Mm-hmm. It's nothing like what we had in Apollo. What right. you have on your phone, on your iPhone, could do the entire Apollo mission. So those types of systems will allow us to explore, learn a lot more about the things that we're studying in detail. It'll allow us to be much more efficient. As far as landing systems, you know, when we were coming down to land, we can pinpoint and land very accurately with where we want to go. We have capabilities to go look at in situ resource utilization, we call it, basically things that we want to get, resources we want to use while we're there. We now have technology that can go do that. It's not going down and landing and poking a rock with a stick, which is kind of what we did. We picked up rocks with sticks and we put them in bags.
Or hit a golf ball.
Yeah. So we're talking about going and actually doing research while we're there on the moon, bringing the scientific equipment with us, which allows us to have much more flexibility. If something doesn't quite come out like we think, then we can go and actually make some real-time changes on the spot, which is a huge difference than where we were, you know, 50 years ago.
Over the past almost decade, the U.S. has relied on the Russian space program to bring astronauts to the International Space Station. With the launch of the new systems with the Orion spacecraft, what is the significance of NASA once again sending humans into space?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. What we've been doing since the shuttle retired is we've been using Russian launch vehicles to send American astronauts and Russian astronauts and other countries' astronauts to the International Space Station, and that system is designed for a low Earth orbit type of a solution. Orion is designed for deep space. Can it go to ISS? It technically can. It was designed to do that in case it needed to, but in reality, this vehicle is designed to go to deep space.
Mm-hmm.
There are other countries out there talking about possibly developing deep space crewed systems that could go to the moon and to the Gateway, and that would be interesting, and we would be interested in talking with them. But Russia has been a key player in our low Earth orbit portfolio since then. And what we have done in the U.S. is we have a commercial crew program with two companies, SpaceX and Boeing,
mm-hmm.
To have American astronauts launch on American rockets again, and which we're looking for to happen in the near future.
Let's take a break now. You're listening to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Rick Pantaleo. Here's a reminder that Press Conference USA is available for free download from our website, voanews.com/PCUSA, or from Apple Podcasts. I'd also like to tell you that a new VOA English app for both Android and Apple devices has been developed, and we encourage you to download and use them. You can find them at the Google Play Store for Android or Apple's App Store for their devices. We also hope you'll get in touch with us through either Facebook or Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA, or by sending us an old-fashioned email to pcusa@voanews.com. Now, back to the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. Today, we're discussing NASA's plans of sending humans back to the surface of the moon with its Artemis program. My guest today is Marshall Smith, the Director of Human Lunar Exploration Programs at the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, or NASA. Marshall, those of us who do remember the Apollo moon landings will never forget the technology that got us to the moon. There was the amazing and powerful Saturn V rockets that provided the thrust needed to power the command module, which housed the three Apollo astronauts, from Earth's gravity to the moon and back. Then there was the spider-looking lunar excursion module, or LEM, that was used to take two of the crew from the orbiting command module to and from the surface of the moon. Well, that technology used back then may look primitive today. I remember being amazed with it and the ingenuity it took to create and develop it. How was that technology that was incredibly successful then influence what NASA will be using with today's Artemis program?
Yeah, that's a great question, too. I can tell you that the folks who did Apollo knew what they were doing. They had the right solutions in most all the cases. That's why they were very successful. So the vehicle size, for example, is massive, and SLS will be massive, too. It'll be the biggest rocket ever launched. And that's because that's the amount of fuel it takes to lift the mass that we need to take all the way to the surface of the moon. Orion, same system. So, you know, really what we want to get to with these technologies is to allow us to be better informed, allow us to get more work done, more exploration done with the systems that we have in place. And, of course, we're leveraging tremendously off the Apollo program, and you're going to see things that look very similar.
It's interesting, this past year with the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing, a lot of people started looking back at the moon. Do you think the publicity that surrounded the anniversary is going to impact Artemis?
Yeah, I think so. I think that people realize that, wow, maybe we really should be thinking about the moon again. And as I said, there's a lot of scientific value there that we shouldn't ignore. It's in a vacuum and those types of things and doesn't have an atmosphere or a magnetosphere. But, you know, there's beauty there because it doesn't have any geological or meteorological disturbances. So the rocks that are there are exactly like they were when mm-hmm. it was formed. Mm-hmm. And so we can actually go and pick them up off the surface, which we can't do on the Earth. Those have been turned over and over and over again and again. So there's a lot of scientific value that we can learn about the early solar system from that.
When we sent the Apollo missions to the moon, we sent three people. Two happened to go down onto the surface of the moon. What about Artemis? How many astronauts and who gets to go to the moon?
Well, I'm sure they're going to fight over who gets to go.
So there'll be someone still remaining in the gateway.
So what happens is Apollo can carry four crew, and mm-hmm. we will send four crew up to the gateway. And then two of the crew are going to stay behind on gateway doing scientific experiments and working in the gateway. And two will actually get on the lander and go to the surface of the moon. And so, yeah, so the gateway you can think of like a command module. That's what we used to leave for Apollo. There was a command module. That was all disposed of. The gateway will not be disposed of. It's a reusable command mm-hmm. module. It stays in orbit continuously. And that allows us to do not only house the crew that's not going down and to do experiments, but also allows us to do quite a bit of experimentation. We can load experiments on the outside of this and run it autonomously, uncrewed, during the time that we're not there.
Looking at some photos of the gateway, it kind of reminded me a little bit of a mini ISS. Would you consider it like a space station?
I don't consider it a space station.
Okay.
It is a prototype spacecraft. It has its own propulsion system. We can change orbits with it.
Mm-hmm.
It does not have to stay in that particular orbit. It is actually a prototype. When we were doing Mars studies, I have stacks of studies that are probably as tall as me, and I'm pretty tall, that show probably more than half of those studies show that if you want to go to deep space locations like Mars and actually even the moon, von Braun had an architecture that went to the moon that had a prototype of system like this. Those systems require some kind of place that you can actually refuel, redock, check things out before you go to deep space. That's what the Gateway's job is. It's more of a spacecraft than a space station. Also, it's much, much, much smaller. If the system was fully built out like we think, it would only be about a tenth of the size of the ISS.
Okay.
So it's much, much smaller. And actually, when we do the 24 mission, it's only going to be composed of two components, which is the power propulsion element, which we have a contract with Maxar. And they'll be delivering that in late 22 to be out there for doing demonstrations. That has a solar electric propulsion and provides power to the Gateway and to the systems that dock to it when they're docked. And then and the HALO, which is the Habitation and Logistics Outpost, which is what we use as a node, if you will, to allow the lander and the Orion and the logistics module to dock to it. It's only be those two components. So it's actually the lander will actually be much bigger than the Gateway.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the lander, is there actually a lander almost ready to go in 2024?
We have been, so several companies have been looking at lander technology for a while, so we're not starting from ground zero.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been working on a contract that we are going to release over the fall and hopefully have someone on contract, you know, very soon that will provide us multiple providers of landers that we can then go move out with. So, yeah, there are people out there and there are solutions out there. Different companies have different solutions. We're trying not to to actually specify the design. We're actually being pretty high level on this and saying deliver two crew to the surface of the moon, stay out for X number of days, those types of things. We really want to keep this at a more of a service type of high level. This is what we want you to do. And then let our industry, who's now capable, not like we were in Apollo, who's actually very capable of providing unique solutions, to propose those solutions, and then we'll select from those.
And among the people that are being considered, I'm sure, like SpaceX and even Jeff Bezos a few months ago, shortly after the blog entry that the NASA administrator mentioned the project, he unveiled a lunar module. Is he in the running too?
All companies are welcome to bid. So we are looking forward to everyone proposing. I would not be surprised to see proposals from Blue Origin and SpaceX and Boeing's and Lockheed's, and I can go on the list, you know, keep going on the list. So there's a lot of proposals out there.
When I was doing initial research for this program, I kept looking for landers and I couldn't. I'm like thinking, okay, they've got the Orion, they've got the Gateway. How are they going to get to the surface of the moon? I'm not seeing anything, and that's because it's still in development.
That's exactly right. We're in the process of, you know, contracting for those, and that's the more difficult part from a schedule perspective here is getting something that big and that complicated on contract, designed, built, and tested and flown in the time that we have left. We believe we can do it, though. If I didn't think we could do it, I wouldn't be here.
Question that has been in my mind for some time now regarding the Artemis program is, when Apollo went to the moon, as you mentioned, they picked up rocks, they picked up samples, one of the astronauts hit a golf ball, they rode a little dune buggy over the moon. What will these astronauts be doing when they go to the moon this time around?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. We actually, like I said, there's a lot more science we want to go do rather than just picking up rocks. We want to go investigate the water ice. We want to learn how to live in an environment like that because Mars isn't that different. I mean, it's a little bit higher level gravity, but it's still the atmosphere. I have to wear spacesuits. I can't walk around in my shirt sleeves.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to learn how to live in habitats. So we're going to talk about rovers. So we want to test our rovers. We want to test our mobile, our long-duration habitats. If we have fixed habitats, say a small system that we land that we live out of for long durations, we want to live on the surface of another planet with communications delays, and we want to understand how do we work, how do we deal with medical issues, operational issues, those types of things. There's hundreds of facets of living when you start getting further and further away from Earth. They get that much harder, and I would rather be, just like we've been in low Earth orbit where we're hours away from help, now we're going to be days away from help. The question is, you know, when we go to Mars, we're going to be maybe months or years away from help, depending upon the kind of mission. So we need to really take those next steps to prepare ourselves for that kind of mission.
You had mentioned several times in our conversation about using the moon ice, the water ice that's on the moon, mostly in the deep craters, I understand.
That's right.
Are there plans to use any of the other resources on the moon?
Well, yeah. So we know the content and the makeup of the moon, and there are people that are looking at how do we use those materials to manufacture things that we might need if we were actually sitting there on that surface and needed to have some kind of capability. So that's in process as well. You know, how do we use the or do we mine it, or can we find precious metals? Those types of things that we would actually want to take, it would be profitable for us to take back. So that's part of what going to the moon is about. Let's see what's there. Let's see what we can, you know, how does this actually help our economy? And how does it help the planet as far as getting rare earth metals that haven't been turned over by lava and volcanic action? And we have a hard time getting to those. We may be able to get to those and use those in our manufacturing to help us here on Earth. So we kind of, at some point, this is called exploration. We know a lot, but there's a lot we don't know. And we're only going to find out by going and seeing.
And can you tell us about some of the other partnerships? We had mentioned some of the companies involved, but how this is going to be different than the early days when basically NASA asked for bids from different companies to do X as far as different projects. Is it going to be more of a collaborative type of effort with these companies?
Oh, absolutely. And that's part of that when I was talking about the contract mechanisms and what we're looking for. We're going to actually expect in the contract that we're coming back a collaboration plan. We want them to tell us how they expect to work with us so that we can work together. That's the only way we're going to get there, is working together to make sure that we can build a system that we're happy to fly on. And so collaboration's a key point with these companies.
Speaking of collaborations, are other nations involved? I understand Great Britain is working on parts of the Orion.
So ESA provides to us
European the Space Agency.
European Space Agency, which is actually a group of nations that work together. They are providing the ESA service module, ESM. That is the service module that powers the Orion spacecraft. So they're providing that. But we're working closely with ESA and many other countries, Russia, Japan, other countries, to look at what kinds of things they would like to contribute to the Gateway and to our lunar surface vision and where we want to go. You know, I look at it this way. I say, you know, can America do all this by themselves? Well, we could. But on the other hand, you know, going to Mars, for example, is a really big endeavor. And, you know, when we go together, we go far, I've heard it said. When you go by yourself, you can go quick, but going together, you can go far. Right. And that's what we want to do. We want to go far. And so we think international participation is very important to us. And that's actually in our space policy directive, not only go with our industry, but our international partners.
One final question, Marshall. Are we really on track to land a person on the moon? Well, are we going to make it?
I absolutely believe we are. We are working very hard. I'm putting in many, many hours a week doing this.
I understand you're a busy person.
And the team is doing the same thing. Industry is doing the same. They know these contracts are coming. They're working very hard. They're getting systems ready. Entire agency and industry is mobilized to make this happen. So absolutely, we believe we can do it. And, of course, it takes the will and support of the people and the funding that makes that work.
Yeah, and it's hard to believe when you're talking 2024, that's 5 years from now.
Yes.
That's going to be a quick turnaround. Yep.
Well, we had a plan before the vice president's and the president's challenge to us that was get us there in 2028, and that was a budget neutral plan. So we went forward with that, and then what we're it was going every 2 years starting in 2024 as a decent element test. In 2026, we were doing a full up test, so we could have put the crew on the 2026 launch, and that would have been moved up 2 years. So really, in my mind, I look at it like a 2-year acceleration. And you know, if we're not having to be budget neutral, I think it's doable.
Well, you know, we're rooting for you. We wish you much luck with the project to you and your colleagues.
Well, thank you very much.
Marshall, thank you so much for coming in.
I enjoyed it. Happy to come in.
That was Marshall Smith, the Director of Human Lunar Exploration Programs at the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, or NASA. I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today's program. The Science Edition of Press Conference USA was recorded and produced at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington, D.C. Our technician for today's program was Wagner Roberts. This is Rick Pantaleo reminding you to be sure to join Carol Castiel next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.